You're listening to Veracity Radio. We'll be right back with a look at Liz Cheney and an op-ed on the British reaction to U.S. anger over BP. After we listen to this segment from this week's Democracy Now!, with an interview with Nathaniel Raymond, director of Campaign Against Torture at Physicians for Human Rights, and Dr. Alan Keller, director of the Bellevue NYU Program for Survivors of Torture.
I'm Amy Goodman. A new report from Physicians for Human Rights accuses the Bush administration of conducting illegal and unethical human experimentation and research on prisoners in CIA custody. The report details how doctors, psychologists, and other professionals monitored the effects of sleep deprivation, waterboarding, and other so-called enhanced interrogation techniques on more than a dozen prisoners. It charges that CIA doctors and other medical personnel turned the prisoners into research subjects and collected data in order to study and refine those techniques, but did so under the guise of trying to protect the health of the detainees. The report argues that in determining how far a harsh interrogation could go, doctors, psychologists, and physicians' assistants participated in justifying acts that had long been classified illegal, provided legal cover against prosecution, and helped design future interrogation procedures. CIA officials have rejected the conclusions of the report. Agency spokesman Paul Gimigliano said in a statement, quote, "The report's just wrong. The CIA did not, as part of its past detention program, conduct human subject research on any detainee or group of detainees." Well, the report's called Experiments in Torture, Evidence of Human Subject Research and Experimentation in the Enhanced Interrogation Program. I'm joined now by two of the report's authors. In Boston, Nathaniel Raymond, director of the Campaign Against Torture at Physicians for Human Rights, lead author of the new report, and here in New York, Dr. Alan Keller, the director of the Bellevue NYU Program for Survivors of Torture. He's an associate professor of medicine at NYU School of Medicine. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! We're going to begin with Nathaniel Raymond. Lay out the report and respond to the CIA spokesperson.
Well, Amy, our response to the CIA is simply this. We've shown our evidence to the world. It's time that they show us theirs. And our report is very clear about its limitations. It's based on heavily redacted public documents that were declassified over the past year. But what's clear, even despite the blackouts in the documents, is that there are three instances in the Bradbury Office of Legal Counsel memo, which we have concluded, and we stand by this conclusion, can constitute human subject research and experimentation in contravention of both the Nuremberg Code and U.S. domestic law. Those three instances, which you touched on earlier, include a passage where CIA physicians and other personnel appear to be monitoring the difference between applying tactics individually and sequentially to detainees and applying tactics in combination. And there's a conclusion based on the observation that was occurring by health professionals that the tactics would not behave or cause increased susceptibility to severe pain when used in combination. And as Physicians for Human Rights, we have made the clinical conclusion that this can constitute evidence of human subject research and experimentation because of data collection, the application of that data to generalizable knowledge, and then the use of that generalizable knowledge to inform policy and procedure. And that's what we see happening in three instances in declassified documents.
And explain a little more of those three instances.
A second instance we document is the use of saline as opposed to water in waterboarding. We see a meticulous collection of data related to waterboarding, and that data is used, it appears, to inform basically how the CIA took the tactic from what we call the SEER technique, the Survival Evasion Resistance Escape Military Training Program, and basically reversed engineered that into what we call waterboarding 2.0. And in the attempt to, quote, make the tactic safe, legal, and effective, it appears that the inevitable outcome of using health professionals to attempt to take inevitably harmful tactics and, quote, unquote, to sanitize them or make them safe means applying medical knowledge in ways that would never have been clinically allowed. And one of those examples, which I mentioned a moment ago, the use of saline and waterboarding was ostensibly to prevent hyponatremia, a sodium deficiency that can come from large volumes of fresh water being ingested. That is not only unethical and illegal, it makes a mockery of the core foundations of the healing arts, which are about doing no harm in the application of medical expertise, specifically in reference to the interest of the patient. The detainees are being observed not for purposes of, quote, safety or even efficacy, both of which are illegal roles for a health professional. It seems to be, chillingly, Amy, the health professionals were a critical part of the legal cover, the get-out-of-jail-free strategy devised by the Office of Legal Counsel. And I want to make that abundantly clear, that what we're documenting here is not some attempt to make it safe or efficacious. That's not what the evidence shows. What the evidence shows is science being applied to law as part of an attempt to insulate the Bush administration from charges of torture.
You know, it's interesting. In the last week, President Bush, and speaking to a corporate audience in Grand Rapids, Michigan, admitted that, you know, the U.S. government did waterboard 9/11 mastermind Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. And he said he would authorize the waterboarding again, he said, to save lives. Dr. Alan Keller, your response to that, and then what you were most struck by in this report.
Well, I think there's several chilling things in President Bush's comments. First of all, it's a misconception that these methods in any way are effective at eliciting accurate information. They don't make us safer. They get people to talk, but it doesn't mean they say anything truthful. That's the first thing. The second thing is this terminology. We've sanitized what we've done. We call it waterboarding rather than mock drowning. We call it enhanced interrogation techniques rather than brutal torture. So back to this current study that we conducted. When I became a physician, I took an oath that I would care for patients, that I would be professional, that I would, as Natty said, do no harm. This is something that every medical student, every health professional takes. When it comes to torture, health professionals, United States health professionals, have done profound harm. This most recent report provides very chilling evidence, and we believe only the tip of the iceberg, health professionals working for the Central Intelligence Agency, in addition to monitoring torture, in addition to devising these methods, conducted unethical and, we believe, illegal human experimentation. It was under the guise of somehow making this safer, as if it was possible. But I think, as Natty alluded to, there may well have been other reasons and other motives for this. Basically, to provide a cover of that we had not crossed the threshold of harm, which is part of the definition of torture. But experimentation was done. We collected data, monitoring individuals who were being subjected to waterboarding, mock drowning. They collected data with regards to sleep deprivation. Data was collected with regards to whether these methods in individual or in combination increased pain. And we actually know that in its implementation, it was common that they weren't used in isolation, that individuals were subjected to forced nakedness, extremes of cold, solitary confinement all at once. So they actually utilized the findings of this under the absurd notion that you could make this safe. The example with regards to saline, salt water versus plain water, it raises a ridiculous hypothetical that somehow maybe it's safer to drown in the ocean than it is in a pool. So again, in addition to being unethical, this should be seen for what it is, junk science. But more than anything, what this calls out for, what this cries out for, is further investigation and, we hope, accountability.
What about the New York state law, Dr. Keller?
Well, as part of the accountability, New York State, under the I think, visionary leadership of New York State Assemblyman Gottfried and New York State Senator Tom Duane have proposed legislation which says if you are a health professional who participates in torture, you can potentially lose your license, specifically codifying and banning medical participation in torture. This legislation is crucial because we've learned that health professionals were front and center in devising these methods, in providing the legal cover, and this also has implications both domestically and internationally. And the state is exactly where this kind of legislation should happen. Health professionals are licensed not by the federal government, not by the Army, but by the state. So I encourage all of your listeners to go to stoptortureny.org, sign an online petition, email and call Senator Duane, Assemblyman Gottfried, and thank them for their leadership. And let's get this legislation in New York State passed now.
It might surprise many to know that there is, and I know there are a number of torture centers in the United States, meaning places for treatment of torture victims. You head one, the program at Bellevue, NYU, Survivors of Torture. You have treated thousands of survivors. How did your looking at victims of the U.S. torture program compare to those you have treated from around the world?
Well, I should first say my work in caring for torture victims really stems from my work beginning as a medical student with Physicians for Human Rights. Who I am as a doctor, as a person, has been formed by this remarkable organization. So I encourage your viewers to support Physicians for Human Rights as well. Based on that work, I started a program along with an extraordinary group of colleagues at Bellevue and NYU where we provide interdisciplinary comprehensive care for refugees, asylum seekers who've endured torture and other human rights abuses. That work informs this current anti-torture work that I'm involved with, because as a health professional who cares for torture survivors, I have seen the devastating physical, psychological consequences this has on individuals and their families. As part of my work with the Bellevue NYU program and Physicians for Human Rights, I've also examined a number of former detainees from Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo, individuals subjected to sexual humiliations, beatings, forced nakedness. And as a doctor who's evaluated a lot of torture survivors, I can tell you that these are some of the most damaged individuals I have ever examined. And it's important to note, the individuals I examined, it's never justified to torture anyone, but the individuals I examined and my colleagues at PHR examined were individuals who were ultimately released without ever having been charged. So these were individuals who we think were in the wrong place at the wrong time, were brutalized and then trampled and then sent out. Well-